Welcome to the Red, White, and Blue Flags F1 Podcast. I'm Ryan Vasquez.
And I'm Stephen McNally. We are your home for F1 racing on this side of the pond. Ryan, the season is upon us. We are underway. It's been a long break. So happy to see some racing again. Just maybe we should be a little bit closer.
Yeah, I almost forgot what the Dutch National Anthem sounded like.
It haunts me in my dreams.
Yeah, haunted my dream. But no, good old reminder, like right back on it, you know, like riding a bike, you never forget. But yeah, maybe a little bit closer. I think, you know, some of the performance this past week by a few cars made it even easier, possibly. And then, you know, there's a lot of things that went into this race that were rather unique that made it so uniquely boring in some ways. I think hopefully we'll see something a little bit better as some of these teams sort out some of their early race problems.
Yeah, certainly before preseason testing, you know, the thought is who's going to be able to challenge Red Bull this year? Is anyone going to get close to them? There was only one non-Red Bull winner last year. And before testing, we would have thought certainly they're going to finish the first race 1 and 2. You know, we go through preseason testing and Ferrari showing some signs and Mercedes has finally abandoned the concept of the car that didn't work. And, you know, maybe they're going to be on the ball. McLaren ended the year strong. Maybe they've got something. Aston Martin was up and down last year, but they certainly proved they could be in the mix. And then they all kind of laid an egg.
Yeah, wasn't very pretty. I mean, you know, a little bit of unreliability issues throughout the top teams. You know, Ferrari had their challenges, and you know, I think they said they were losing 0.6 seconds every lap, essentially.
Leclerc specifically, because he was having some brake balance issues where, you know, he had 100 degree Celsius difference between his tire temperatures. So that was a problem uniquely to him. Carlos wasn't affected by it, hence him finishing on the podium. Right. But that was certainly a gremlin they didn't expect after a positive test.
But always Charles. You know, it goes, I know it's pretty early in the season for Ryan's American analogy of the cast, but I don't know. Is Charles like the Justin Herbert of F1 racing? You know, if he only had a really good car, if he only had a better team, if he only had a better team principal, he'd be Max Verstappen on steroids. And we just never see it. And in complete fairness to both Justin Herbert and Charles Leclerc, the reason why both of those arguments are valid for the most part is that you see some of that truth. But you just want to see Charles in a good car for once a whole year without any reliability issues and see what he could do.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, he was the fastest one-lap driver in qualifying. He just did it in the wrong session. So, obviously, the talent's there. But, you know, it's a really interesting situation in Ferrari this year. Charles is obviously on a long-term contract, going to be there next year. He's going to be joined by Lewis Hamilton. And Carlos Sainz is a man without a team at the end of the year. But he's going to be putting on a 24-race audition for whoever's wallet's open. And, you know, in the opening act, did just about everything he could do to prove that he deserves not just a seat, but one of the top seats.
It's frustrating to me to see that the only guy who was able to beat a Red Bull last year is the guy who doesn't know where he's going next year. And, look, I understand, and I don't blame the situation. You got a chance to get Lewis Hamilton, and, you know, Lewis Hamilton wanting to go to Ferrari, you know, that makes sense. Look, it just does. But that Carlos is pinched in the midst there as if he's not a good driver or not a worthy driver is frustrating. But, you know, a little further down there, the guy he is losing his job to had to spend part of the race with his left butt cheek in the air, as he said. Plus, the power units on both of those Mercedes were struggling. They were having a hard time charging their batteries. Looks like they were coasting and losing some speed, too. So, I mean, it's bad enough when you've got a Red Bull that's pretty dominant still, was the most dominant car last year, still the most dominant car this year. And all the improvements you made are kind of like out the window when your cars are not performing.
Yeah, you know, talking about Lewis at Mercedes, he and George both suffering from these overheating issues, and there's four teams that have Mercedes-powered engines between Williams, Aston Martin, and McLaren, but only two of them were suffering overheating, which was Mercedes and Williams. But, you know, again, to have two customer teams in McLaren and Aston Martin, kind of, you know, they didn't necessarily outperform them this time because Mercedes took more points than those other two teams, but, you know, they were caught off guard at the beginning of the year by Aston Martin, then outdeveloped by McLaren in the middle of the year, and then Aston Martin came back and was a podium winning team at the end of the year again. And you think it's your own power unit, you're developing it, you should be able to iron out any of these gremlins, but yet you're the car that's overheating and your other customer teams are, you know, doing just fine. They have, you know, other issues that they're trying to work for, but no power unit issues. It's kind of embarrassing.
It is. And, you know, we see a race where, you know, Aston Martin kind of piddled around, but pulled out a good race. Lance Stroll was able to kind of like salvage his race after an early issue. You see the Haases, which are kind of improving a little bit, better than I expected them to be. But it didn't feel like a good portion of the teams that were out there on the grid had some sort of problem going on, whether it was a technical failure like with Williams or Ferrari or Mercedes, or a personnel failure like with VCARB, right? It's just it's one of those things where you just wonder, are we getting into a sillier season than we are, even though the product is kind of boring? I mean, there is no question about who was first, second, or third, really. And you're just wondering, are we going to see a lot of the same, especially when Red Bull says, we've got a major improvement coming. You're like, you guys suck. Please don't improve the car. Like, it's good enough already.
Well, let's try to lighten the mood a little bit with some positives. And, you know, it was the first race of the year. There's always going to be something to work out, but this is the first season opener where every driver finished the race. There was no DNFs. So while people had to manage some issues with either getting spun on the first lap or having overheating or having the computer lock up because Williams brought a brand new steering wheel for the first time in 15 years, or Valtteri trying to get the longest pit stop record again. You know, these things will happen, you know, in any season opener, in any sport. So positive, you get to, you know, best thing to do is have an immediate race right after. Just like, you know, a lot of teams that lose are like, all right, I just want to play tomorrow because I don't want to sit here and have to wait to have to play it again. Like, I just play tomorrow and get this loss out of my mind as quickly as possible. Have a short memory. So that's a positive. Two, the one-lap race pace, the entire field was covered by a second in Q1. Like, that is some of the closest qualifying times, top to bottom, 1 through 20, that we've had in a long time. So even Alpine, who I don't know who still works there anymore because it feels like 80% of their team has resigned in the past 12 hours, are still, you know, just tenths of a second away from making Q2 or, you know, making that step up the midfield. So there's closeness there. Work out some of these kinks, have a little bit better qualifying. There's points to be made. You know, are you going to close this huge gap on Red Bull? Maybe not. But, you know, the 2018 season started with Valtteri winning in Australia by 22 seconds. And, you know, that wasn't the harbinger for the rest of the year. I mean, it was pretty much for Mercedes, but Ferrari was very much in it for a while. And, you know, it have a lot to think about from last year. It's a big sample size, but looking at just this year, it's just one race. There'll be better tracks for these teams. And, you know, we'll see some good competition. I'm still holding out hope.
Yeah, I am hoping so too. I'm hoping that more than one car can break through and beat the Red Bulls this year. But no, to your point, I think who looked good or who didn't have any problems, and it's probably McLaren, Red Bull, and it's hard to say when you're a lower tier team. Like, I mean, that's it, isn't it? I mean, am I missing a 13? Maybe Aston. I mean, Aston had a little spin and then they were okay, but that's what it is. But yeah.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, got to give credit to Lance. It was a strong race in the sense that he was dumped in, you know, the first two turns by Nico and, you know, went all the way down to 20th, clawed his way all the way back up to 10th. So that's a strong performance. Fernando qualified 6th, didn't hold on to it because they were kind of opposite strategy and definitely ran him too long. Didn't cover off other people's pit stops. So pace, I feel like, is good for the team. They just, you know, unfortunate lap one incident and some, you know, questionable strategy calls. Haas looked strong. Nico qualified, you know, 10th. He got into Q3. He didn't do another lap in Q3 because he was going to save a fresh set of soft tires for the race, which would have been very interesting had he not broken his front wing, you know, crashing into Lance Stroll. So it would have been interesting to see how that strategy played out. I think, you know, even Zhou Guanyu, he finished 11th. You know, that's pretty strong showing for Kick, Sauber, Stake, whatever they're called. we'll try to get used to all the new nomenclature, what people actually say on the car, what we're actually going to call them. So I think Logan without his technical issue, I don't think he would have been challenging for anything. Williams as a whole was not exactly where they wanted to be, and then Alpine, they were just slow. It didn't seem like they didn't have like anything outside of strategy happened to them. That's just the pace isn't there in the car. And I think 3rd to 10th will be up for grabs for the next handful of races for four teams: Ferrari, Mercedes, McLaren, Aston Martin, and then maybe, you know, Haas and RB Visa Cash App Racing. They'll be the people fighting for 9th and 10th. So I think beyond where Red Bull is, you got some good fights. Now, ultimately, we want a season to have the fight around the championship and not be a foregone conclusion, but we got to take what we can get.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you. Look, Red Bull has earned the right to be as good as they are. They made the changes and done it, you know. But I would say it would be nice and a lot more tolerable if like half the races could go to other teams this year, you know, that'd be nice. And you know, we'll see, we still got time, but just, you know, a lot of things in this race, Steve, it's, you have the issues with various competitors who supposedly closed the gap on Red Bull in the off season, that caused them to lose some time. To what you're mentioning, is first time we had everyone finish the race, which we didn't have those. We had all green flags, you know, stops, and people were able to stretch out their leads. There was no bunching up of the field again, no red flags, no yellow flags or extended yellow flags. Tires, right? Again, another issue with these tires getting better and better, being somewhat of an issue, you know. Carlos is probably still waiting for Checo's tires to fall off, right? It's like you go out there with hard, you go out there with softs, it doesn't matter, right? Especially if you've got pace.
And you know, it's also the first race with the new DRS rules where it's available on the second lap of a race start or race restart. And I really thought that might keep it close for a little bit, and it did for the midfield, but Max had already broken the 1 second necessary for DRS on lap one. He like already gone. And there was no one who could muster a fight to even challenge it. He had a pit stop lead on the next driver within, you know, I think like 20 or 22 laps. So there was never any jeopardy. He was out there watching Netflix on a steering wheel.
I think it's interesting because, you know, I think Max is the kind of driver who likes having no one in front of him. Right. And I mean, every driver is like that, but he likes to just drive the car and that car performs well. I think that's the biggest thing that everyone has. People really have to prioritize trying to push Red Bull down in the order in qualifying if they think that's where they have their best chance to do so. Because Max having to come through traffic just puts him in jeopardy. That's just the truth, right? If you always start first and you get off to a good start and you never are in jeopardy, there's not a chance he's going to crash or have to race someone into a corner. You know, it's just he's never really in jeopardy if he can just drive fast at the beginning of the race.
No, they looked at 10 laps of his sector times, and they were exact to the 10th of a second for, you know, 10, 12 straight laps. Like, oh, his first sector times were 39.58, 39.56. Look, it's hundreds of a tenth of a second. Or sorry, not hundreds of a tenth, hundreds of a second variance. Like, that's how minute his or how acute his driving style is, that he is completely on it when all he has to do is focus on driving the car. If he doesn't have to race anybody, he goes into this machine mode where it's just digital inputs into the steering wheel. He goes completely emotionless. I'd be surprised if his heart rate, you know, ticked over 60.
Yeah, it's just, he is like, you know, there's a very famous iteration of the Dutch national team soccer in the 80s, and they were called Clockwork Orange for how meticulously well-run they were. And he is the epitome of Dutch in that sense. He is very clockwork. And no, again, a huge credit to him. And again, I will throw this out there because I was thinking about this weekend. If Max had not won his first championship the way he did, I think you wouldn't see anywhere near the amount of hate for him in Red Bull, right? And it's just, that's unfortunate. He's not my favorite driver in the world. It's not my favorite team regardless. But had that not gone down the way it did, with Lewis losing it that way and many people on the grid still thinking that that was Lewis's championship that was taken from him, not let alone the fans that are out there who believe it, I think it'd just be a different version of it. And it's not like this guy wouldn't still have multiple championships in a row. It's just, I feel like F1 felt like they needed to jump the gun and make the change now, and they didn't care how that looked. So but they're apparently lately, Steve, they don't care much about how things look.
Oh boy. Well, you talk about not liking Red Bull, you know, oh, Max was winning too much, Red Bull dominance, that's why we don't like Red Bull. I think for a lot of us, you know, yourself and I included, how an organization carries itself, you know, inside and outside the lines, you know, but plays a lot into how you think of it. You know, we don't hate the Patriots because they won a lot. Doesn't help that they won a lot, but it comes down to what they stood for as an organization. How, you know, they were the spy gators, the deflators, you know, the, we're going to skirt the issues and kind of chuck the rules in the bin, kind of franchise, you know, led by a guy who was gruff and rough around the edges and impersonable, and a lot of parallels to Red Bull for, you know, just a guy who is a prickly pear of a person and feels like he can circumvent the rules, and whatever rules are left don't apply to him. And you know, some quite serious allegations that, you know, for a lot of people, the allegations would be enough for them not to have a job anymore. But still he persists.
Right. And it feels at this point like many great organizations, their own downfall is going to come at the hands of internal issues and not the competition on the field. Right. And that's been the most interesting storyline is off the track. The race is ho-hum.
The race is ho-hum, but it is cooking off the track.
It is cooking off the track. Like, people can't even keep up with what's going on off the track. We've alluded to some of this stuff already. You know, if it was just Alpine being a dumpster fire after this offseason, that'd be a hell of a thing, right? But you've got, I mean, the one interesting thing maybe is that Yuki and Danny getting into it, although it's more one-sided, Yuki being a tad immature and angry about the way they're swapping positions in race. But you've got, you know, just a disaster at Alpine. You've got drivers at each other at VCARB. You've got a lot of open seats potentially. You've got probably Carlos not giving a damn about team orders most of the time with Ferrari if it means he's going to lose. I don't know how Lewis and George are going to get along this year with George trying to establish himself as the next guy and Lewis just trying to make sure he has the best season possible. Although Lewis seemed very zen throughout the weekend. And, you know, there's always... It's always like that scene in The Dark Knight at Red Bull where, you know, the Joker essentially breaks a broomstick in half and says, we got positions open, you know, fight to the death. So, you know, who knows, musical chairs wise, you know, Checo's in the hot seat. Danny would love to get that seat. Yuki obviously would, you know, if you're not winning in the Red Bull in a Red Bull car, you would lose your seat. You know, Yuki's trying to probably prove that he belongs. You got Liam Lawson in the wings. A lot going on.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of these situations are tied into each other. You know, we could all, you know, try to read tea leaves and look too deeply into it. But, you know, I look at the team formerly known as AlphaTauri situation between Daniel Ricciardo and Yuki Tsunoda with a little, you know, post-race in-car Donnybrook, more or less. I look at that as Yuki can see the environment around him and can calculate that there's not a lot of pathways to success for him right now. With the current situation at Red Bull, with, you know, Christian Horner, you know, is he under fire? Is he not going to be there? The situation is a little toxic, which might cause Max to leave, and that leaves an open space. And you would think if Christian Horner's in place and there's an open seat at Red Bull, that's going to go probably, or the highest probability, going to Daniel Ricciardo. And where does that leave Yuki if he's not going to Red Bull and Honda is leaving their partnership and going to Aston Martin, and then Honda doesn't have the kind of sway to keep Yuki on the team? You know, Liam Lawson's going to step in for sure. It's assured that he's going to be racing here within the next year or two. Like, there's no doubt about it at this point. So Yuki's looking at every single race, every single finishing position as his resume to keeping his life in Formula One. So having to give up a spot to Danny at the end of the race where he felt like it was earned has to be the most frustrating thing in the world to him. Right. So I feel like that's why he might have lashed out. I'm not saying he's right, because clearly there was team orders. Clearly he took too long to make this switch around, which ruined Danny's opportunity to gain another position or two. So had he played the team game at the beginning and Daniel not made progress, I'm sure they would have switched back. That's normal protocol. But he held off for two laps and was stubborn about it, and then ultimately let Danny go through on like one of the worst places on the track, and he was never able to make the use of his soft tires at the end and get his positions, and then Yuki lashes out at him like he's the one making the call.
Right. It's not. It's coming from team orders, and it's just, that's, it's immaturity, right? Again, to he goes, what better way to prove yourself to the powers that be at Red Bull than by wrecking your million-dollar cars because you're immature, right?
Yeah.
So
shades of Days of Thunder.
Right. Good old Rowdy there, right? But look, the thing here, which is interesting, we've been diving around it a little bit, but it's the ripple effects of what's going on off the track at Red Bull. And it's just interesting, this fight between for power between Helmut Marko, Jos Verstappen, Christian Horner,
the ownership in Austria, the ownership in Thailand, like there's two factions warring over control of the Formula One team.
Right, and this is where it's a little Tom Brady and Belichick-esque, where it's like, is it the quarterback or is it the coach, right? And it seems to be some things here where people are backing the coach. And despite the, you know, protestations of the quarterback, in this instance, Max, and the quarterback's father, which never really happened with Tom Brady, but the quarterback's father here, more like Caleb Williams, I guess, and whatever. But here, people would say, well, Max is a star. He's probably about to win his fourth championship in a row. He's still in his 20s and one of the best cars. You know, get rid of Christian and let's bring somebody else in and let's keep it going. There are other people who think, well, Christian built this situation. Let's swap in another driver if Max isn't happy about it. We've got tons of people waiting in the wings to drive the fastest car on the track. And we'll just keep it going. And so that's interesting. But that what happens there is so many things. Now, obviously, things had to happen beforehand for these some things to happen. But what we're talking about, Steve, we're like, well, first, Lewis has to jump to Ferrari. Lewis jumps to Ferrari, and that opens up a seat at Mercedes. And Carlos now doesn't have a seat. All right. So now we have a little bit of musical chairs. Well, now there's a coveted seat at Mercedes. And I don't think Max is really willing to leave. I think he's okay with leaving if he has to. I think he's a man of conviction, but I do believe he's using the Mercedes seat as leverage because there's been a lot of chatter that Max could be the replacement at Mercedes, right? Much to George Russell's chagrin.
And thought he was going to be number one.
Well, if that happens, what happens at Red Bull? So does Checo now actually get to keep his seat for sure because you want to keep that continuity? Or does that open up both seats at Red Bull? You know, we'll bring in a rookie or a younger guy, or we'll bring in Fernando and elevate Danny. We'll go get Carlos Sainz and maybe bring Fernando or Carlos Sainz and Danny. There's a lot of things out there because we know Fernando Alonso has never missed an opportunity to take advantage of chaos.
Never misses an opportunity to make an opportunity for himself.
Correct. Right. And to be honest with you, I would love to see Fernando Alonso in a Red Bull to see if, you know, hey, look, I think he's still got it. He's a great driver. I'd like to see him in a good car if he's going to be out there. But
to think 43-year-old Fernando Alonso could be sitting there with the choice of a Red Bull or a Mercedes seat, it's not out of the realm of possibility of that happening.
Well, because Mercedes is in a weird math, too, because we know this. This is actually the original reason why Lewis left, right?
The original reason was Alex Albon needed his appendix taken out. And then
I know, that's been the running joke, right?
Everything dominoed from there.
Right. But it goes, let's go back a step further. The reason why Lewis left was Mercedes was unwilling to give him a 2-year deal, right? And that was because they didn't want to commit to him longer than when they jumped into the new 2026 car and they've got Kimi Antonelli waiting in the wings, a young rising star. And Toto has a little bit of that recall that he remembers where he's like, we really wanted Max many moons ago and we had nowhere to put him, right? And so, fine, you've got a lot of things going on right now. And I think, like, the only two people who really have a legitimate idea about where they're racing next year are Charles and Lewis.
Yeah,
and maybe the McLaren drivers.
Yeah, definitely the McLaren drivers, because they have, I mean, again, contracts only mean so much in Formula One these days. But you would think Lando and Oscar are pretty well locked up, as locked up as you can be. Both Ferrari drivers, maybe Lance Stroll. Like, I think that's Lance's seat as long as he wants it. But, you know, there's 14 other drivers who do not have a contract just for next season. Not talking about 2 years. We're talking about just for next season. There's definitely 14 drivers who need to put pen to paper if they want to race 12 months from now.
And that's crazy. And I will say we'll probably see some stuff. But, I mean, it's just frustrating to see here, because we don't have to have some of this stuff. I mean, we haven't even talked about keeping Andretti out and providing two more seats.
Oh, yeah. Like, I was going to mention, like, Michael Andretti's got to be looking around and like, you guys are said, I'm not good enough for this. I'm bringing down your value. I don't bring enough to the table for this. You got, you know, Red Bull over here, who's ready to scare away Ford from being their engine partner because they don't want to deal with the drama. You've got Alpine, who doesn't even bother to show up in all intents and purposes. You have other in-team fighters. Like, maybe I'm better off for not showing up to the circus. Maybe you did me a favor, but it's embarrassing that you're keeping me out under the guise of I'm not adding value to this. You know, you've got the president of the FIA, who now might be under investigation for race fixing because he wants to step in and personally wipe away a penalty on Fernando Alonso, overstepping his powers. It's you know, frustrating that so many things layered on top of each other was kind of collapsing with the house of cards.
Yeah, there's a lot of arbitrariness here. You know, we've seen it for years now. And it's not just like the Lewis decision where it's like, you know, every track has different things and the officials change and they swap the officials out and they still make the same mistakes. It's like, is there not an official rule book where things are allowed except under certain circumstances where the officials make a choice at this particular race?
There was more like emphasis and litigation on the side of the FIA when it came to Lewis's piercings and anything that's going on right now.
Well, it's just what they decide to go after. You know, they talk about like impropriety or like the reputation of the sport. They go after Susie Wolf as well, right? Because of maybe sharing insider information with her husband Toto.
That was found to be baseless.
Which is found to be baseless. I mean, look, fair enough. I mean, they're married. You know, it is what it is. But seriously, we're having issues with that, but we don't sit there and take a stand and change things around when there's other improprieties elsewhere. And that's just
take a look at the information that got to look at the information that Christian Horner is sharing allegedly with his team members.
Yes. Information.
We'll call it data.
We'll call it data. The data he's sharing with other team members, right? So, look, what Christian does and shows in his off time is whatever. But when it becomes public, it's a problem, right?
You're also, if it happens at work to a subordinate.
Well no, it goes, and this is the key thing, right? I'm reading some things. It's like, the leaders of F1 were gobsmacked. They thought there was so much overwhelming information, supposedly, that they were just assuming that Horner would have to step down. They never thought an arbitrator would side with him. So I want to know what he has on the arbitrator. But, like, in this instance, it's a great point. Essentially, it looks like they were all ready to get rid of Christian. He walked in there and told them no, and they didn't. And if there's ever a power discrepancy that you ever wanted to see, is the guy that you accuse being able to walk into his bosses and saying, you're not going to fire me, and they don't. What can I say? That's a power discrepancy of no other magnitude.
I mean, if he was American, he could just run for president.
Yeah, well, that is the kind of attitude you see with the politicians we seem to be electing in certain parts of the country, right?
I refuse to be held accountable.
And so I know Super Tuesday is around the corner, and you know we're in a political year here in the United States, but we don't really want to get tremendously political. But the thing here that is just frustrating for me is that Red Bull always seems to get away with it, and they get to sit there on their high horse and look down at their noses at everybody else and sick F1 on people when it's not advantageous for them.
Well, yeah, because I mean, it's still in my limited in scope and minuscule in brain power opinion, you know, snowball effect 2021, they got their hand caught in the accounting jar. And they were supposed to be punished for overspending and breaking the budget. There was, quote unquote, a penalty put in place. They had a little bit of financial wrist slapping and then got a little bit of time in the wind tunnel taken away. But to what end? They were still like, it wasn't enough to stop them from developing this juggernaut of the car. And that was the whole point of having the budget in place, so that a team wouldn't get, you know, the kind of leaps and bounds head start that Red Bull got. And now they've been holding it for 3 years now. You know, if there's any example of a team just being able to turn their nose up at the rules and realize that they will not be held to the same kind of accountability as other teams, like, look no further than that example.
Right. I mean, there's advantages all around, and I know, you know, the Visa Cash App Red Bull is its own team, right? And if they were, you know, more closely aligned, we would see the performance. But the fact that they've got two other cars on the grid where they can stash drivers if they want to is a huge advantage to them too, right? Which is allowed. And don't get me wrong, it's not like other teams don't take advantage. I know Mercedes takes advantage of Williams where they can, but, you know, it's not like Toto's counting on stashing Kimi at Williams next year. He needs to have a seat available for him in 2026. And so I don't think the Red Bull team thinks like that. They're like, we got a rookie coming up. If Liam Lawson needs a place, we'll stick him in AlphaTauri, or, you know, Red Bull, Visa Cash App, whatever you are this year. And he's okay. And then we can see how he does, and then we can funnel him up to Red Bull when we have time. So, I mean, like, they have a lot of advantages built into the sport, you know, some of which are, you know, theoretically taking advantage of what is legal. But it's just a bit frustrating when you see them having such a huge advantage, apparently because of it.
I think there's other teams that will take advantage of everything that's there for them, and there's teams that will take advantage of the system. I don't think Ferrari gets anything out of giving engines to you know, Sauber or Haas. You know, they're like, we're Ferrari. I mean, maybe it's a little bit of hubris from them thinking that, what am I going to learn from Haas? But certainly, you know, Sauber was the door that Charles walked through on his way to Ferrari, because he wasn't going to step into either, you know, Kimi Raikkonen's or Sebastian Vettel's seat when he was a rookie, but there was an opportunity to go in through Sauber. So that was one lever that they could pull. But as far as, you know, also using it as a junior team and a, you know, potential stream of research, wink, wink, to see how certain upgrades are working, because it's not in-house. So, you know, there's no other team that takes advantage of it like Red Bull.
And, you know, hey, look, again, all credit to them. If you're not, I'm not saying they're cheating, but if you're, you know, there's an old adage in NASCAR, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying, right? And as we saw this week, Kyle Busch using a weird glove to try to break aerodynamics was just like how he thought he wasn't going to get caught. Anyhow, the way they cheat over there is ridiculous, but they usually get caught. That's the thing, Steve. They usually get caught. No one gets caught in F1. No one gets caught in F1.
I mean, yeah, it seems like in these days, you know, maybe not as much. You know, for, Mercedes had the DOS steering wheel system a couple years ago. They let them use it for the year, you know, even with teams protesting. But it was in the rules. They found a loophole. It's not like they broke a rule. They just it just was a good interpretation of it. At the time, Racing Point was able to essentially copy the year's previous Mercedes and put that on track to some pretty strong success. You know, wasn't against the rules per se. It was just on the very cusp of breaking it. So yeah, it seems like there's a lot of, you know, asking for forgiveness in lieu of asking permission. And a lot of the times you don't have to be forgiven because they'll let you keep doing it.
Yeah. They'll let you keep doing it. So we've only touched on some of the controversy, or at least the competition off the track for headlines that is outpacing the competition on the track. But we'll wrap it here for this edition of the Red, White, and Blue Flags F1 podcast. Again, I'm Ryan Vasquez.
And I'm Stephen McNally. And we will catch you next week as we break down the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix and hope for some strong competition on and off the track. And we'll catch you next time across the line.